Good afternoon and welcome to a special infrastructure themed tech radio. I'm Ken Osborne, and today I'm joined by regular panelists Joel Brovelite, Amos Asaf, and Jeff Litterick. SDPB is taking a look at a wide range of critical public infrastructure across South Dakota, from roads and bridges to housing and agriculture. You can find archives of those programs and more at sdpb.org/infrastructure. In today's world of cell phones and iPads and computer network infrastructure like roads, needs to be planned, developed, maintained, and expanded. Today, we're going to hear from two men who play critical roles in South Dakota's network infrastructure. You don't know their names, but if you've got children in school, used a government website, made a phone call in South Dakota, or watch cable TV, their work and planning has made an impact in your life, and your digital future in the Dakotas depends partly on them. Later in the show, we'll hear from SDN CEO Mark Schlanta, but first, my conversation with Jim Edmond. Jim Edmond serves the multiple capacities for the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications there in the state of South Dakota. He serves as Chief Security Officer, Broadband Program Manager, and Deputy Commissioner. The BIT manages information technology services for the state of South Dakota. I spoke with Jim last week. What is your, I know what your job title is, but really, what's the scope of what you do for the state?
Good question, Kent. Kind of varies on a daily basis, you know. Some days are administration in regards to, you know, the inner workings of BIT. Some days are, you know, more focused on customer service and helping our clients get to their business needs done, which may include security, cybersecurity issues. Networking, broadband is certainly a significant component of that. You know, and then there's other project-specific things that are going on. You know, BIT is always involved with a wide variety of efforts with our agencies to try and make them more efficient and so forth. And so we have some of those projects that are on a regular basis that require attention some days.
Sure. And when you talk about clients, you're speaking of state agencies.
Our client base is fairly significant across the public sector, Kent. Certainly state agencies are a significant portion of that. And when we say state agencies, I mean, that's, of course, the executive branch and the governor, but it also includes the legislative branch and the 105 legislators, in addition to the unified judicial system and all the constitutional offices. So BIT provides a variety of technology services across those branches of government, but in addition, we provide significant services to the K-12 community through what we call the Digital Dakota Network, but we also provide higher education through their research network and production network, which is research, education, and economic development is the READ network that public universities across the state ride on. So in addition, we have some cities and counties that we provide services to also. So it's a pretty wide breadth of technology, from telephony to computers to broadband to software development to cybersecurity. The list goes on and on.
Is that a common approach to technology and infrastructure in other states?
No, we are very unique in that regards, in that we run such a highly centralized, highly efficient IT organization. There may be a couple of other states that have some degree of standardization and centralization, but for the most part, you get to states and each individual department is going to do their own degree of IT in some manner. So really, if you look at it from traditional state government, K-12, and higher education, we're probably the only one in the country that does it to the depth and breadth of services that we do here in South Dakota. And that's been in place since the mid-1990s, when Governor Janklow exercised a consolidation effort of all state agencies from an IT perspective. So we've been doing it that way for quite a while, and we think we're pretty efficient, and it has gone a long ways across government, K-12, and higher education in providing significant financial savings.
And is financial savings, is that the only reason to do this?
Depends on which side of the table you're on. You know, financially provides a significant amount of justification for legislative resources and that type. But purely from a technology basis, our perspective is really customer service orientated and trying to provide as much affordable technology to the clients and agencies as possible. We kind of like to try and follow a philosophy that in the Department of Transportation, for example, they have all sorts of engineers that build roads or build bridges or maintain roads or expand roads, whatever it might be, and they need to be industry experts in their business, which is transportation and such. Technology is just a tool for them to use in order to accomplish their job. And so we like to be the technology experts, and whatever we can do to support their business needs, you know, that's what we're here for. And if you can apply that same philosophy across other business needs of government, you know, whether it's a correctional situation or social services, health, schools, whatever it might be, you know, I think it becomes a far better service from a reliability, dependability, and efficiency perspective if in the end you have those folks that are dedicated to that market, to that profession, providing the services.
So we've taken a different approach than the rest of the U.S. mainly. Are we meeting the needs of the public?
I think we're meeting and exceeding the needs. And if you compare it to what other states are doing, we're far ahead of them. I just returned from a conference in Philadelphia last week of peers from across the country. And quite honestly, I had multiple conversations in regards to various states and where they were in their degrees of consolidation, because that's efficiencies and consolidations is always an important need of IT government officials across the country. And time after time, you know, we hear the comment that, well, we're not like you yet, but we hope to be there someday. You know, and I think, you know, we take those words as quite a compliment to what we've been able to accomplish, you know, over the past few years. And I do believe that other states would, you know, very much like to be in our position, simply from a technology support and efficiencies perspective.
Where do you see any opportunities for development in the next year or so?
One of our biggest challenges in front of us today and in front of the entire IT sector is the world of cybersecurity, in trying to protect our sensitive and confidential information from those that don't have permission to view it or use it. Whether you're doing online banking at home or whether you're trading, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of stocks across particular stock exchanges, you know, you have to be educated and informed in regards to cybersecurity. I mean, this is a whole different realm of finances and economy today versus 20 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago, you needed to protect your checkbook and make sure that you knew where your ATM card was, okay? Well, for the most part today, checks have gone away. ATM cards are still, debit cards are still significantly in use, but the world of online economy is here to stay. And if you do not practice safe computing, again, whether you are an individual or a small business or a large business, you may have already been hacked. If not, you certainly will have be attempted, you know, soon. And so cybersecurity and educating state employees and our clients is a regular concern of ours. You know, that's probably the first and foremost challenge that we have, not only for the next year, but for the coming years. Beyond that, the whole world of mobility, smartphones, individuals want to be connected to anything from anywhere. And that provides opportunities for us from a network and a broadband perspective, but it also requires some work in the security side of developing applications. So mobility is certainly something that has grown significantly within the last couple of years. If you look at our wireless broadband providers across the state, you know, they're regularly trying to beef up capacity on their towers and across the state. Those two items are pretty big. Networking and broadband in general, people are always wanting faster connections, whether at home or in the office. And so our telecommunications providers across the state are, you know, regularly upgrading their infrastructures to try and offer bigger, faster, you know, more responsive, quicker response time for their ISP customers and for their business customers. So I suppose, you know, in those three, you know, those three are a pretty good list just starting with that, you know, from a security perspective, a mobility perspective, and a broadband view.
What are the biggest threats for BIT, I guess, today and maybe a little look into the future as well? Is it kind of the same thing?
Well, it's individuals are always concerned when they have to share private and confidential information with somebody, and whether that's with state government or a credit card company or a hospital or a clinic. And they should certainly be aware of sharing that type of information and what is it going to be used for. From a government perspective, we have a significant amount of trust that we've generated over the years with our constituents, and it is most important that we continue to retain that trust as they provide us, you know, their sensitive information, whether that's Social Security number or it could be health-related information from a disease perspective, business tax information, etc. You know, all of those types of things are extremely confidential, and we are trusted with that information from our citizens and from our businesses. And so it is extremely important that on a daily basis we pay attention to making sure that it continues to be safeguarded in as safe of manner as possible. You know, in a few years ago, you were most concerned about, you know, somebody walking into a bank and robbing it. Bank robberies and credit card thefts today do not occur, you know, from a physical perspective in a face-to-face manner. You know, they're much smaller occurrences. But there is attempts on a daily basis, and these attempts can be from within the United States. They can be from Europe, Russia, you know, the Middle East. It truly is a globally interconnected world. And being able to safeguard assets against attacks on a regular basis, it takes time and effort. And, again, individuals and businesses need to recognize that and make sure that they act accordingly to protect whatever it is that they may have, you know, from their clients or from their own personal perspective.
As technology changes and how we use it change, when you're dealing with infrastructure, how do you and how does it keep up with your clients' needs?
there's a balance within government. We like to use the term, we're not on the bleeding edge, because the bleeding edge comes with financial and other repercussions. In some ways, we like to be on the leading edge. In other ways, we like to be perhaps fast followers. And this somewhat goes by how technology evolves. You know, today, I would say from a broadband and a networking perspective, you know, we're certainly out there on the leading edge in that we have high-speed capacity at many offices and schools across the state. So I think we're doing well in that manner. Now, the network is really nothing unless something is running on top of it, and that's really where our clients and meeting our clients' needs come in. You know, whether it's providing applications for Department of Social Services or helping our DOT engineers build roads better, or helping a correctional officer, you know, do something in regards to their facility. The network is just kind of the interstate highway, and then the applications that drive over it are the vehicles. And so keeping agencies educated in regards to what possibilities might be out there, they really do a pretty good job of, in their own world, of seeing what other states are doing and coming up with their own ideas on how to do this particular business process better. You know, some of our departments are very aggressive and they push us on a regular basis. Others may be, you know, lag more and behind them because of financial or other reasons, and that's okay, because they can learn from those out on the leading edge. So that's one area where I think we do pretty well. Where we may be more in the following stage, I mentioned mobile applications. You know, we can do some things today, you know, primarily from Game Fish and Parks and Tourism, and other folks have mobile apps that their clients take advantage of. We need to really dig deeper into what other constituent markets and what other clientele may be able to benefit from that, and you know, possibly promote that further. You know, with your own experiences with South Dakota Public Broadcasting, that mobility and being able to connect to various resources on the fly is really where today's generation is. You know, whether it's the Y generation or the millennials, you know, they're digital natives, and they expect to have access to those things at their fingertips. And so part of our challenges here on the government side is being able to make sure that we can provide those most important things that they need access to, that we can deliver them to them.
So that was Jim Edmond with the state of South Dakota. And we also have a person that works with Jim as a regular panelist on the show, and that's Jeff Litterick. And he joins us from Pure today. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Ken.
I found it kind of interesting to talk to Jim a little bit last week, and to hear about how, you know, South Dakota jumped kind of ahead of the rest of the nation maybe, you know, 20 or so years ago. And can you give us a little perspective on how much things have grown sort of from 1996 to today?
Yeah, actually I can. I actually started in the networking position at BIT in 1996 and kind of took over responsibility of the internet connections and the statewide network at that point. Back in 1996, all the BOR and state government offices, BOR sites meaning Board of Regents, the higher universities, were all connected on a T1 system back then, single T1s. Now, a T1 is 1.5 million bits per second. And every site had a single T1, and we had one T1 to the internet. And that serviced all the university campuses and all of state government. That soon grew to multiple T1s for the internet, and when the K-12 system came on in 98-99, and we hooked up all the schools, we actually went to a whopping 10 megabits per second of speed. Now, if you have a midco cable modem, their basic service is three times faster today than that was back then when we hooked all the K-12 schools and we had all of the colleges and state government on the on this one network. Today, as of 2013, we are running multiple 10 gigabit links and a lot of traffic and getting close where we may even have to upgrade or add even more than the two 10 gig links we have now just to support the bandwidth.
So you're talking about the bandwidth that is going to the schools and in some cases cities and you know so the sort of more of that public sector type businesses, correct?
Yes, so the multiple 10 gigs of the internet feed into what we call the read and DDN networks. And those networks which are 10 gig in their core too and multiple 10 gigs in their core feed the campuses the K-12 schools, and then state government agencies and entities and state radio towers, and the list goes on and on. We have approximately about 1,200 sites we serve inside of South Dakota directly. Now, not every site, of course, has gigabit speeds, and gigabit, remember, is, 1,000 megabits per second. So if you go back to that number I kind of gave when we first started off at 1.5 million, and now all our core and internet are multiple 10 gigabits. We've grown in those years 2,500 times in terms of speed. And the growth is actually picking up slightly. It kind of flatlined there, but with the expansion of Ethernet infrastructure from the carriers in the state of South Dakota through federal grants and broadband grants, we're seeing the pace of consumption, not just the pipes, but the consumption of the pipes increasing at an exponential rate too. So in many ways, we're actually needing more bandwidth even faster than we did 5 years ago.
Yeah, it sounds like a really tough challenge. I mean, you've got people consuming more, and then this is just a layman's point of view, but it seems like what we're consuming is more, with videos and even audio and moving bigger and bigger files. You know, if researchers are doing things at public universities or things like there are projects at different schools, it seems like how hard is it to keep up, Jeff? Are we keeping up? And what are the plans for the future?
We are keeping up. One of the hard parts, and this is, this is a problem that the cities don't have, Sioux Falls and Rapid have, and we get plenty of bandwidth in there, and we have pathways to 40 and 100 gig in those places, is when you have to get the fiber and the carriers and their expensive equipment out to Lemon, South Dakota, or Eagle Butte. That's the real challenge in South Dakota, is serving those more rural communities. If you're along the interstates, we have lots of bandwidth open and for future use and available and can be lit up. The bigger challenges nowadays are, Sioux Falls, yes, it's a big school system, requires a lot of bandwidth, but the kids in Timber Lake or Eagle Butte need the same access to the same applications, and they need the high-speed bandwidth too. And we have been making great strides, especially in the past 2 years, with BTOP grants and multiple carriers in getting high-speed services to those. But we actually still have a school out in the Black Hills, right on the Wyoming border, that we just can't get high-speed to. They actually have to use satellite providers and multiple satellite providers to try to load balance to get any acceptable amount of bandwidth through. And it's incredibly hard because there's just no way, unless we are willing to spend millions upon millions of dollars to get anything faster just because of their location. And it's a unique kind of challenge in South Dakota that some states don't have. Other states out west have these same challenges. But that's probably the biggest one going forward in terms of infrastructure growth.
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about this subject. I mean, we can all, when we talk about roads, we can all visualize that. We've got the state has, the federal has an interstate highway. The state has roads. The county has roads. Townships have roads, and they kind of get smaller and the services is kind of degraded as you go down. And I don't want to say degraded in a bad way. I mean, we go from maybe asphalt to gravel to, lower maintained gravel. I mean, we can all wrap our heads around that, but getting our heads around what's, and I'm just making a comment here, what's been made so simple for us, We turn on the iPad and it works. We turn on our phone and we can make a phone call. You know, Jeff, I heard you give a talk the other day, and you're talking about a technology the state's using when a state employee possibly opens up their laptop, no matter where they're at. The software is smart enough. It's smart enough to, you know, to find the internet and to make that secured connection back, and then their applications are available to them.
We've come a very long way from the days of dial-up internet access in the state for both business and residential users. Nowadays, 100 meg connections, 50 meg connections are commonplace. And it just works. I mean, you plug it in, and it just works. There's no fiddling of settings or having to follow these complicated instructions from your ISP on how to get hooked up. You just plug in the port, you turn on the machine, and it just works. It has come a long way in the past, 15 years.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, unless Joel or Amos, do you have anything to add here? Any questions for Jeff or on the topic of at hand? We're going to get into the private sector, I guess, next in the next segment of the show, and talk to Mark Shalanta, the CEO of SDN Communications, and talk a little bit about his take on where South Dakota's been and where South Dakota's going for South Dakota and the region in as far as network infrastructure. Welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for this November 1st. Brisk day out there today. SDPB, both television, radio, and online, have been covering topics, wide-ranging topics on infrastructure in South Dakota. We've talked about roads, we've talked about bridges, housing, and agriculture. As a part of an infrastructure discussion in South Dakota, sdpb.org/infrastructure is where we have many of those reports stored for you to watch and listen to at your convenience. And today's show is themed on infrastructure as well. And I talked to a couple of gentlemen. You just heard from Jim Edmond. Now we're going to talk to Mark Shalanta. He's the CEO of SDN Communications, headquartered in Sioux Falls. I asked Mark to tell me about SDN and the services they provide and the future of network infrastructure in South Dakota.
So SDN Communications, we're a regional network provider. We're owned by the independent phone companies in the state of South Dakota. So these are generally the smaller phone companies. We serve about 80% of the state's landmass as the independent phone companies. And as we've grown our network now extends from Casper, Wyoming, over to the Twin Cities, up to Fargo, down to Omaha. We've helped connect much of rural South Dakota to points well outside the state where we are able to extend those connections around the world.
On average, with the services that are provided to the citizens here, are those sort of equal and on par with those that are found around the country?
Well, when you talk about the services, the broadband services, I think in general, my experience would be South Dakota exceeds what I find with my peer group across the country. And when I talk about exceeding, what I'm getting at is we started earlier, I think, in South Dakota when it came to a comprehensive statewide look at broadband than many other states did. I think there are a couple marker points back in history. The Connecting the Schools program in the late 90s, where, Governor Janklow looked to, normalize or equalize the user experience in schools all across the state. Certainly worked with state government, got all of those types of connections organized. I think that was one of those events that put us ahead of many of our peers across the country.
Did it put businesses on equal footing by sort of de facto, the internet is there now, so it's able to be used for personal and business and educational use then?
Great question. Many times it takes a leader. And I think in our case, with that example with the schools, state government was the leader to help bring those services to many communities. Not that they didn't exist before, but I think it helped raise the bar in a number of communities as to what's expected at a customer premise, like a school or a courthouse or a bank. And so as that started to roll out and more in the late 90s, you started to see a wider acceptance and frankly, application usage. The the amount of applications you could run across a network and on your computers, you know, as that has grown, that's really forced the expansion of those of the broadband networks as well. And today, you know, we've moved so far beyond where we were in the late 90s in terms of the connectivity at schools and banks and courthouses and Main Street businesses, where we've moved beyond that T1 connection or that 512 internet connection into many, many multi-megabit or 100-megabit connections to these locations, and it supports the applications, it supports the commerce, it supports the learning, and it supports the e-government that takes place, not just in our state, but all states. But our state has been one of the leaders in this area.
How do we stack up against our close neighbors geographically and then to the U.S. in total, I guess?
When I talk to my peers, you know, and I would put my peers as the men and women who run statewide networks that are, you know, owned by the independent phone companies in their various states, they're always impressed with the level of coordination we have at state government. In the neighboring states, I can only think of one neighboring state, and that's North Dakota. That probably even comes close to us in terms of its centralization and its, I'll say, common sets of interfaces across the schools, the counties, the cities, in terms of the different interfaces and the services that the state helps provide to those subsets of government. When I look to the east, into Minnesota, you know, I just don't find that same state government-led, you know, force. I find many more splintered groups, three, four, five, maybe eight school districts working together to put in a network that I think they wish would have come from the state, but it just hasn't.
And I did hear Jim Edmond tell me about centralizing services as being a cost-effective way of doing it. Is cost the only matter when it comes to this?
Well, I don't think so. I think certainly cost is good if you can manage your costs. You know, as a government entity, I think that's what all of the citizens of those different government subdivisions would ask of our political leaders and our you know, government staff that support those items. I think some of the other benefits that come, you know, I think of again education in our state. You know, we have a limited number of resources. We only have so many dollars that we can put into our K-12 and higher ed environments. But I think one of the things that technology does is helps level playing fields, brings content from around the world right into the most rural classroom in our state. So I think, you know, gone are the days where is the school district using the most up-to-date textbook? You know, more and more those textbooks have moved online, so more and more we're relying on the technology to help deliver education and help facilitate some of that. We have the teacher in the classroom, and the technology, you know, provides so many more opportunities, I think, for today's teachers to bring real-world examples right to the students.
How about reliability? Are things backed up to the point that you feel that you're comfortable in case of a disaster or a cable cut or something along those lines go? How's our uptime?
Certainly, uptime is one of the things that we talk about a lot at SDN. And uptime, not just with, you know, literally, what does it mean in terms of the network? And are we running at 5.9s? I also think of uptime for the users of our network somewhat figuratively. I think of uptime as that time that you're able to spend perhaps quietly away from the office, not worrying about your technology, because frankly, your technology providers are able to support you. You're not worried about them. They've got your back. I think of uptime in that frame as well. But I think for most people, when they think of uptime, Ken, is, you know, is that reliability that you're talking about, those 5.9s, is the network running? And, you know, day in, day out, the networks run smoothly. You have planned maintenance. You do planned upgrades. You do those types of things during off hours, off days. We're often working on holidays to make sure that that customer experience when they come back is what they had before the holiday, and perhaps even better after the holiday as we've done that planned upgrade. But your comment about cable cuts, you know, it's a part of our business. As we put more and more fiber optic facilities in the ground, we're carrying more and more bandwidth across those fiber optic facilities. That fence post, that project that needs to be done today, will oftentimes find, you know, a fiber optic cable and interrupt that data flow. And it disrupts the reliability of our network. When those events don't happen, networks today run so smoothly. It's what consumers, businesses have come to expect.
How can you plan for what the next tool is or what the next cool thing is that the consumer is going to want?
You know, those explosions, the explosion of those devices into the marketplace have just thrown off the bandwidth curves tremendously. I did a presentation about a year ago for our industry, and just about every one of my slides, Kent, was a hockey stick. And so let me try to describe the slide. Across the bottom, I had time, 1998 to 2012, up the, I'll say the vertical axis on the slide, was bandwidth. Megabits is what I had in there. But every one of them, you had kind of a flat piece, and as you start to run out to about 2005, 2008, boom, the stick would start to move up, and it moved up quickly. So, you know, again, I think as those devices, the tablet that you talked about, as they've gone into the marketplace, landed in the hands of the consumer, landed in the hands of the student, they're pulling so much more content, pushing so much more content than they ever did before. It's put demands on the network. And your question was, how do you get to planning? You know, guess what? I'm an engineering guy. I spend a lot of time, you know, looking at the past. What am I seeing today? What am I reading about demand forecasts in the future? Trying to plot that out and make sure the network stays ahead of that curve.
Do you just look at some of these numbers and shake your head? I mean, do you look at the prime time usage of, let's just say, Netflix or something like some very high intensive bandwidth use thing? And how does that make you feel?
At times, a little intimidated. You know, being part of the industry in the late 90s when 1 megabit, you know, certainly 5 megabits was fast. You know, today the average consumer would not accept it as a wired connection at their home. They're looking for much more, but the devices we've put on those networks are so much greater than they were. You know, you can buy thermostats that you can remotely program from your phone or from your iPad, from the office. You can lock the doors, light your lights. You can do so many of those things, and those are all, though they might not take a lot of bandwidth, they are bandwidth applications. And when you start to multiply those across millions of homes across the country, those little instances take time, take bandwidth. Those are things that drive the usage on the network. Refrigerators that tell you when the milk is low comes from bandwidth, comes from networking.
Reliable networking.
Absolutely. In the United States, in North America in general, we have that luxury. Really, not all over the world do they have that same reliability. There may be places in the world where, frankly, the average consumer gets a higher speed, but I don't know if they have a higher level of reliability that we have, here in North America. You know, there are some geographies that are a little tighter, you know, so in some cases they're, you know, North America is a big place. If you cross the United States and Canada, we are a large geography. We are a large country, it's a set of two countries, the United States and Canada. You know, some countries are a little tighter in terms of their geography. I think it helps them with their speeds and frankly, probably helps them with their reliability. But I'm confident that if North America, United States, stacks up very highly with the rest of the world, when it comes to the reliability, the day-to-day use, what we, you know, are able to achieve across our networks, I'm confident we're in the top five there.
Let's talk a little bit about what's next. Are there any future developments or opportunities or anything that you're working on that maybe we haven't heard of that you'd like to talk about today?
Well, one of the things that we've been working on at SDN, and it's what we're hearing from the independent phone companies who own us, and the enterprises that we support across the region. It's a little bit more into managed services, where they'd like us to, I'll say, own and manage the infrastructure that their business runs on. They're looking to buy a service, have a reliable service, and a predictable set of costs. That's been a shift for us. We've had some challenges, but we're making great progress there. And I think that's going to be one of the areas we spend more and more time on, because it's what customers are asking for. It's the experience they're asking for. And frankly, it's the experience they can find in other parts of the country. So it's just, you know, as one of the providers here, we're trying to fill that role for our customer set.
Yeah, that goes right back into planning and meeting the needs, really.
It does.
And that was Mark Shalanta, from CEO of SDN Communications. We enjoyed talking with him. We'll discuss if our needs are being met after this quick break. And welcome back to this special edition of Dakota Midday Tech Radio. We're back on the air November 15th. That's, I believe, right in the middle of the football championships. We'll be back then. And then, of course, our Black Friday show. The day after Thanksgiving, two more shows for the month of November, guys. But today, our topic is infrastructure, and you can find an archive of some of the programs that SDPB as an organization has produced in the past month or few months on the topic. SDPB.org/infrastructure is where you can find that. We do have a listener email today from Peg in Custer. She says, "Hey, great topic. I wonder if there's going to be any discussion on increasing bandwidth capacity West River, especially in rural areas. We don't have enough population out here for anyone to invest in capacity, but the population keeps growing and the system is overloaded. We all pay taxes on our phone bills for communication access in rural areas. Are any of these funds being used to increase our capacity out here? How can we even think about economic development if we even can't give potential companies access to reliable high-speed internet services?" And she says, "Thanks, Peg and Custer." Jeff, you had a comment on the FCC taxes, correct?
Real briefly, and there's hope in both ways. And one, the state actually has been helping along the state when we can. But the two funds are for your universal phone access. That is what pays for the rancher to have his telephone lines strung out to a ranch or to rural areas in general. The more rural, the more it costs to get a telephone. The other part of that fund goes into what we call E-rate. Now, E-rate is a fund that the schools use both directly and the state uses to help pay for their network and internet access. Now, that's just for schools, but one of the benefits, and I can't stress enough, over the years we found is, as you know, different state agencies or the schools need higher bandwidth, we are a customer. And when a customer requires those high-speed bandwidths, the carriers then have an incentive to actually add those services in. They may just go in originally for the school, but once they're in the town, they can hook everybody up to the town slowly as it grows because at least one or two customers are using it. It creates the business case for the carriers to actually put those services in to these small towns. And we find that a lot, especially with the schools and other community anchor institutions, hospitals and stuff. We're the original consumers of that, and that drives that whole town to being able to get that service. Now, the FCC, that other part that pays for your remote telephone, the FCC is actually planning and wants to do this, though they're still in committee meetings and there's still pressure from some phone companies, to take that away from providing service of phones, just phones, to rural people. And what they want to do is turn that into a broadband fund where they pay for rural internet access. Because the whole country is moving over to voice over IP, voice over the internet. An old telephone line isn't as necessary anymore. It's the internet connection that is required. And the FCC wants to take all those dollars that right now pay for rural telephone lines and change that over to rural internet access. And when that happens, hopefully that'll create an incentive for build-outs of internet access to even, you know, those ranch houses out, you know, 30 miles from town. So they're trying to do that. It's in process. If you really want and are concerned about this, make sure to write into the FCC. Go to the FCC website. Read their stuff. They are always seeking public input. The more rural input they have versus urban, the more chance stuff like this will happen.
So that's probably FCC.gov if you want to make comments on that, correct, Jeff?
That is correct.
Yep. Amos, you had a quick comment for Peg.
Well, and Peg is right when she says that there is a lack of people in that area to give an incentive to the private groups to get connectivity out in those areas. One of the things that has been done to improve that was SDN Communications had a BTOP grant, the Broadband Technology Opportunities Program, that allowed SDN to take and deploy, 350 plus miles of new fiber that probably wouldn't have been deployed just because of that exact reason, because there wasn't an economic viability for it. And 300 or over 300 new sites were touched. And generally, those are healthcare and those are library and those are public safety and government offices. But what that means is that it's just a step closer to those even more rural areas. Once that infrastructure is there, it makes it that much easier to build out. But again, you're right. If there's one person who lives 17 miles from anything else, it's tough to have a reason to bury that much fiber in the ground or even make any other broadband available in those areas. Just one of the frustrations of living way out in the boonies, I guess.
Sure. So that's maybe one issue we'll have to maybe watch over the course of the show and maybe have some updates on. Jeff, I know I hear from some consumers that maybe speeds in other areas aren't maybe as high as they could be. You want to make any comments on that, Joel?
Well, it's kind of back to the same problem a number of people.
Yep.
AT&T or Verizon picked up a cell tower, they have to plan not only for the coverage area, but the number of people in there and how much bandwidth they have to pull. The cell tower that covers, large parts of western South Dakota, those 30 miles, it's also out in the middle of nowhere, and it takes money to pit the internet into the cell tower. So how much bandwidth do they put in the cell tower to support 10 people? It is a cost analysis kind of thing, not only on the wired side, but also on the wireless side. Yes, they want as much coverage as possible, but they also have to balance how many people will actually be on that tower using it, so how much bandwidth they're going to afford to pit into the tower. If they pit hundreds of megabits in the tower and they're paying like $3,000, because it's in the middle of no place, $3,000 a month, and there's only three people using it ever at, $40 a month or $50 a month, it doesn't pay for itself. So as you get rural, those population densities do matter, and not only capacity, bandwidth, but in coverage areas.
So it's our size and our population that's really affecting the speed and the capacity of the internet services.
And it's kind of, for wireless, it's kind of the opposite. When you get really into a big urban setting, then you have lots of people on one cell tower and everyone has to share the bandwidth. So they have to make, balance those decisions and for both sides, high density versus low density.
Final comments, Joel, Jeff? Amos?
Well, Jeff's exactly right. And as we see, and that was one of the things I didn't mention, but some of the cell phone providers are actually driving some greater coverage, not just in cell phone, but the actual landline that's required to sell to service those cell towers. So as those coverages get better, as the actual cell phone does, that brings that broadband in because that data is available, and we've got infrastructure into those areas. But again, it's all economies of scale, and if there's fewer people, there's less driving force to put that infrastructure in.
Sure.
I will add one last thing. We are seeing, and indications are, that everything is increasing, both on private and public sector, in terms of infrastructure rollouts and higher bandwidth. It's never going to be perfect, or especially in the rural areas, you're always going to lag behind. But it is actually looking better today, this year, in just what the indicators we've seen for getting high-speed bandwidth to everyone in South Dakota than it was even 2 years ago. So, and maybe Google will pit some of those high-altitude, high-speed internet balloons over South Dakota, and then it gets even better. But those indicators are actually looking really good and bright for the future.
They're just going to blow around. I don't know. All end up in Minnesota or North Dakota, and we won't even have them. No, I don't know anything on the topic. I do want to thank our panelists today, Jeff Litterick from Peer, Amos Aesop, and Joel Brovelight here in Sioux Falls with me. Appreciate your time today, guys. A reminder, Startup Weekend, or Startup South Dakota, next on the 15th as well as our next show. So if you want information on that, go to your Googles and find out about South Dakota Startup Weekend starting the 15th through the 17th in Sioux Falls. And thank our panelists again. Reminder to listeners, if you joined us, an MP3 version of the show is going to be posted to the web soon. sdpb.org/infrastructure is the place to go for that. Join us on November 15th. And stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. NPR News is next, followed by Talk of the Nation, Science Friday.